Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Galp Energia Q2 of 2015 results conference call and strategy execution update. Today's conference is being recorded. I will now pass the floor to Mr. Pedro Diaz, Head of Strategy and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Galp Energia's Q2 2015 conference call. Joining me today is our CEO, Carlos, who will start with our strategy execution update, and our CFO, Felipe, who will go over our Q2 results. At the end, we will be available for Q&A together with Thor, our Head of E&P. Please bear in mind that we may be making several forward-looking statements. Actual results may differ materially due to factors included on our disclaimer at the beginning of the presentation. I will now hand over to Carlos. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro, and good morning to you all. It is really a pleasure for us to be here today presenting a strong set of results in the current macro environment. Our integrated position allowed us to deliver an EBITDA of 446 million euros in a low oil price environment. Starting with E&P, our average production was close to 44,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, benefiting from the growing contribution of FPSO number 3, the Cidade de Mangaratiba, that is placed in Ayra South, and from the stable contribution from our remaining upstream operations in Brazil and Angola. Looking at the overall project execution, Lula-Iracema remains a benchmark in terms of execution and production time to market. Within less than 10 years since the first discovery, there are already three permanent production units allocated to the field, producing over 350,000 barrels per day. The FPSO number 4, Cidade de Itaguaí, will be very soon contribute to increase this production. Considering the pace of execution and the strong response we are getting from Lula and Iracema reservoirs, we are able to increase our 2015 production guidance. We are now assuming an average annual production of around 43,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. Please keep in mind that this forecast already considers the ongoing unitization process in Lula field, which we expect to be concluded by the end of the year. The higher than expected production and the level of international refining margins observed during the first half of the year leads us to increase our 2015 EBITDA guidance to the range between 1.3 billion-1.5 billion euros. Our strong operating performance benefits from our vertically integrated profile, which helps stabilize our cash flow generation even under a very low Brent price conditions. I want to highlight that our revised guidance assumes a second half refining margins well below what we have observed during the first half. In fact, there have been no real structural change to sustained refinery margins observed in Europe. This has been mainly driven by strong gasoline demand in Americas and due to the low oil prices. In Iberia, we continue to see growing demand for oil products, which have been benefiting from the economic recovery and from the low oil price environment. Natural gas demand has also been increasing due to a much lower levels of rainfall this year and the low wind power generation. In E&P business, we are very pleased with the progress achieved so far. First and foremost, FPSO number 4 is already on location at Iracema North, with one producer well already connected. Production should start very soon. A total of 12 wells have already been drilled in the Sema North area, of which 6 are producer wells. I remind you that we continue to assume on our business plan an 18-month ramp-up for this unit. In the case of the FPSO number 3, Cidade Mangaratiba, we may be looking at a ramp-up period of close 1 year. We have now 4 producer wells, and the 5th producer is planned to be connected until the end of the year. Considering the outstanding flow rates achieved in the Iracema area, we are producing over 130,000 barrels of oil per day, so around 33,000 barrels of oil per well. It should be enough to reach full capacity. And it's not all about flow rates. The consortium has proceeded also with an effective reservoir management in order to sustain the production level. I draw your attention for the fact that Cidade Angra dos Reis and Cidade Paraty, the FPSO number 1 and number 2, continue to produce at plateau levels. In fact, Angra dos Reis has just entered in its 4th year of plateau. Moreover, total technical costs, this is the production cost plus the DD&A, at plateau, remain quite competitive at around $15 per barrel, a clear indicator of the project's robust economics. As for FPSOs number 5 and number 6, they are on track to start production during the first half of 2016. The number 5, Cidade Marica, is at Moaha Shipyard in Rio, where Brazil will carry out the integration works. And the number 6, Cidade Saquarema, should be about to sail away from Asia to Brazil. A quick update on the replicants unit. A number of mitigation measures have been implemented. Let me highlight the conclusion of the international tender for construction and compression and injection of CO2 and gas modules that we have flagged last quarter. The consortium has awarded the contracts in early last May within the scheduled time period. As you know, years of delay and consequent replacement were on the critical path. We have awarded the construction works to 2 Asian shipyards, which will be responsible for the construction of 8 modules each. The best performer will then be responsible for the construction of the last 8 modules. This is one of the examples of measures implemented to mitigate critical execution risks. And we were able to do so while keeping costs under control and within the time frame embedded in our guidance back in March. Moving now to Yara, the development plans for Berbigão, Sururu, and Atapu fields have been submitted in last June to ANP. As previously announced at the DOC last December 2014, the consortium is assuming as a minimum development requirements 3 production units for the first stage of the development of these 3 fields. That is to say, for both BMS 11 and the transfer of rights area. The priority will be to develop the sweet spots of the reservoir with 2 production units in Atapu by 2018 and a third one in Berbigão in the year after, so in 2019. As for Sururu, the former Yara Central, we have highlighted since the beginning that it was the most challenging area. This area will be subject to further appraisal and a pilot is expected for 2018 through the Atapu North FPSO. Still in Brazil, just a quick word on Carcará and Jupiter. We still need more appraisal work in Carcará in order to fully access the dimension of this discovery, but we are positive about its commerciality. The main challenge will be to find a solution for gas evacuation. We have concluded the drilling of Carcará North by the end of last June. We will now conduct a drill stem test during the second half of the year. We also expect to conclude the second phase of drilling of Carcará Northwest during the second part of the year, which has just started by using MPD rig. Regarding BMS 24, Jupiter appraisal works have been put on hold for now, as we are preparing to request an extension of the DOC submission to ANP, which was originally scheduled to February next year. Our base case continues to be the development of the oil and condensates, but we need more time to mature the development plan and to better define the technologies that should support Jupiter. Still on BMS 24, for some time now, we have had evidences of the extension of Sepia discovery within the block. As you know, the Petrobras business plan considers commercial units for this field. So even if it is still early to elaborate much on this, we will be fast-tracking the works that will help the joint development of these light oil fields. Moving now to our project in Mozambique, we have just received in last June the APCIC proposals for Coral, which are currently being analyzed before we enter in optimization and negotiation phase. In what considers the offtake for gas, we are at an advanced stage of negotiation. As for the Mamba Prosperidade onshore project, unitization discussions with Area 1 have made good progress, and we are maturing the project development with FID expected next year. Moving now to our downstream and gas businesses. Refining results were, of course, supported by the recovery of margins in the international markets, but we were only able to capture them due to the flexibility and, most of all, due to the availability and productivity of our refining system. In gas and power, we saw less trading opportunities in the market, but the structured contracts we have established previously helped to support our activity and cash generation. In addition, we continue to maintain an effective cost control at every level of our organization. So now I will pass to Philippe, who will go over our financials this quarter. Please, Philippe.
Thank you, Carlos, and good morning to you all. Just a quick overview of our second quarter numbers. Starting with the P&L on slide 14, group EBITDA was 446 million euros, up around 50 million euros quarter on quarter. As Carlos mentioned, we were able to take full advantage from the recovery in European refining margins, which, to remind you, were negative in Q2 last year. Also, our Sines refinery was shut for maintenance during part of Q2 last year. Therefore, refining and marketing EBITDA reached 224 million euros this quarter, as the availability of both refineries allowed us to take full advantage of good market conditions. Marketing also provided a solid contribution during the quarter. E&P EBITDA was up 12% year-on-year to 120 million euros, with higher production and a stronger dollar offsetting the very sharp fall in oil prices. Gas and power EBITDA was down to 92 million euros, with fewer trading opportunities and a lower gas price environment. Group EBIT was up to 333 million euros, reflecting the improved EBITDA, but affected by the increase in DD&A related with the ramp-up of FPSOs number two and three. Below the EBIT line, the increase in taxes is a consequence of the higher pre-tax earnings. Net income reached 189 million on a RCA basis. Under IFRS, the bottom line was 100 million euros impacted by impairments, mostly related to, one, some petrol stations and logistic assets in Spain. Two, residential gas distribution assets in Spain as per the SPA we signed with Endesa. Three, the Amazonas exploration assets, which we are relinquishing. Also, as a reminder, we book as non-recurring the temporary taxes on the energy sector. As for CapEx on slide 15, of the 313 million euros invested during the quarter, 91% was allocated to E&P, mostly to drilling of development wells, the Kabyunus pipeline, and the construction of FPSOs and subsea systems for the development of Lula and Iracema. Block 32 in Angola is the other important item here. At this stage, we are not providing revised guidance to our CapEx range of 1.3 billion-1.5 billion euros, other than indicating that it may fall closer to the bottom of that range. On slide 16, you have our summary balance sheet, where you see that working capital remained under control, with inventories down even with a rising Brent in the quarter. Cash flow from operations in the quarter, which you have on page 29 of the attached report, reached 532 million euros, which added to 50 million reimbursements by Sinopec of our loan to them, more than offset CapEx, interest, and dividends. As such, net debt was lower for the second consecutive quarter, standing at 2.3 billion euros at the end of June. Considering the remaining loan to Sinopec as cash and equivalents, net debt was 1.5 billion euros, or just about 0.9x net debt to EBITDA. Our liquidity remains high at 3.2 billion euros, of which cash of 1.3 billion euros, loan to Sinopec of 835 million as of June 30, and undrawn credit line of 1.1 billion euros. This is it from me. We're now happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit one on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Please note that the host has asked for a limit of two questions per person. Again, please press star one for a question now. And we will take the first question from Mehdi Ennebati with Société Générale. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks very much for the presentation. I will ask two questions, please. The first one regarding the E&P division. You've said that the FPSO number four is about to start. However, I wanted to know if you need the Cabiunas pipeline to be operational to maximize your production from the new FPSOs, from this new FPSO and the ones coming beginning 2016, or if you could just inject the natural gas inside the reservoir. Besides, you've told us during the last conf call that Cabiunas pipeline will be operational by end Q4 2015. Now you are talking about commissioning expected during the Q1 2016. So when should we expect Cabiunas pipeline to be fully operational, please? The second question is related to your 2015 CapEx. So you've provided 1.3, 1.5 billion euros guidance in March. Since then, euro weakened versus US dollar. And I wanted to know if there will be any impact on your CapEx guidance in euro, or if the strengthening US dollar is offset by better contract conditions. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, Mehdi, and thank you for your two questions. I will take the first one, and I will pass Philippe the second. So in relation to FPSO number four, we will start with one producer well that will be producing limited by gas flaring. So we will start with the only limitation related to the flaring of the gas. And of course, when we will have the second producer, it will be at the same time where the first injector will be also connected and working properly. In what relates to Cabiunas gas pipeline evacuation, of course it will be required, and we are forecasting that it will be operating by the first quarter of 2016. So I'll let the second part of the second question to Philippe.
Hi, Mehdi. On CapEx, you're absolutely right. So we have a higher dollar versus the euro versus we budget, which is negative, i.e. higher CapEx. However, we have a much lower Brazilian real on which some of our CapEx is based on, and we have some limited optimization of CapEx. Hence, we're guiding you to the bottom of the range for the full year. Thank you.
Many thanks for this.
And we will move to our next question from Oswald Clint with Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you. Maybe a question on Brazil as well, and kind of related to the two Asian companies who are coming in to complete this contract. Can you say if the new contract terms are more or less favorable versus the first contract? And generally, just more broadly, can you update us on what's really happening on the ground with respect to local content requirements and if there's going to be any changes to those? And second question, just related to refining, obviously quite a bit of mark-to-market impact to the second quarter results. I think refining could have been better. Can you tell us if you have any mark-to-market positions for the third quarter? Thank you.
Hello, good morning, Oswald. Thank you for your two questions. So in relation to the first one, we have already anticipated to you the mitigation measures that we have been taking within the consortium. And in what relates to local content, as you might be aware, we are completely complying what is required in the exploration and also in development phase. So we have, in the MS-11, relatively low local content, and by considering only the subsea facilities equipment, we are capable to comply it. Nevertheless, we are completely on track on that, and the two examples that we have already
was related with IESA, so in the PEC 3, that was the most critical issue that we have within replicants delays, and it's for the time being addressed. And it is also the second part that is related with part of the integration and PEC 1 that is also addressed. So local content-wise, we are not anticipating any question, and on top of that, the costs that came from these mitigation measures implementation are completely controlled. So we are not having any additional costs related with this decision. For the second part, for the second question, I will pass it to Philippe.
Oswald, we have first related to H1 this year. We have, within our EBITDA, we have 44 million euros of derivatives already booked, so 44 million negative. Going forward, so we have, it's pretty much a straight line on a monthly basis for each of the 12 months of 2015. As of June 30, we had 30 million of negative mark-to-markets outstanding. Refining margins have since June 30 have come down. So if you were to mark-to-market today, it would be significantly below this 30 million euros outstanding as of June 30. And we have no hedges in place for 2016 onwards. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we will move to Flora Trindade with BPI. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, good morning. Probably a follow-up on this last question and regarding these refining hedges. Just wondering if you could give us a detail in financial expenses. You had a positive impact in terms of FX, and there's probably another relevant impact there which is not detailed, so if you could give us the reasons for that. And secondly, a more general question, and considering the delays you mentioned in the presentation regarding Jupiter and the last presentation by Petrobras, what is your central scenario for both Jupiter and Carcará, and what would be your preferred positioning if there is M&A involving these two blocks? What would be your more optimistic scenario? Thank you.
Hi, Flora, good morning. I will take the second question and I will address to Philip the first one. So in what relates to Jupiter and Carcará, as you are aware, it has not been part of our business plan. So the implications, if any, in our business plan is related with the CapEx. We are following and we are monitoring what is going on in Brazil, and if and when any kind of action will be taken in relation to these two assets, we'll be prepared to take a decision. I have already anticipated to you that GALP is keen enough with all the assets that we have in Brazil, namely with Carcará and also with Jupiter. And therefore we will be, for any sense, we will be part of the solution. We will be positively approaching, and of course if there's any opportunity to increase the exposure of GALP, we will consider if and when it will appear. In what relates to Jupiter, I draw your attention for the fact that we will need to find out a technical solution to address this fantastic reservoir, and therefore I think our attention in the next couple of years will be on that issue. And at the same time, as we have mentioned before to you, we will take care about the Sepia unitization process. So we will split our attention in Jupiter in those two important areas. So I will pass to Philippe now.
Thank you, Carlos. Flora, yes, we have this quarter versus last, we have FX gains, and given how negative it was in Q1, you're right. So we have we're worse in refining margin hedging, and this is quite compensated by FX. And these are operational FX. So this is the difference between the time we book crude purchases and the time we actually pay for that. So this is a euro-dollar variation within the quarter. Thank you.
And our next question will come from Brendan Wan with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just one question I want to just focus on, if you can flesh out a bit more for us, just in terms of LNG trading or your trading business. I noticed you're sending more cargoes to Latin America and made comments about lower demand in China, but can you just sort of talk through what we should be seeing or expect for the second half? And do I assume that the expectations of EBITDA are baked into your group EBITDA upgrade, please?
Good morning, Brendan, and thank you for your question. So in what relates to the trading, LNG trading business, you might be aware that we have prepared ourselves in the recent past to guarantee that what we call the structured LNG business will be a positive contributor for our cash flow generation. And it is the case. So even though the markets, the different market regions has closed the arbitration within the markets, we are still able to generate positive cash on this activity. Of course, when we are experiencing this closure of arbitration and volatility in the market, we will reduce what we call the spot LNG trading activities. And therefore, for the second half of the year, we will remain with our past business that has been structured for the next 2-3 years, contributing positively. But of course, the trading activity that is more based on the spot activity, we are not anticipating any extraordinary result. Therefore, our guidance for the gas and power business will stay between the 350 up to 400 million euros of EBITDA. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
The next question will come from Haytham Rashid with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the presentation. Actually, most of my questions have been asked, but there is one question I have, which is more just as perhaps for you, Carlos, a wider question about how you think about the business and allocating capital and strategic activity in the second half of this year. If we get a scenario which may well sort of emerge where oil prices don't really recover from current levels, but at the same time we're starting to see refining margins and some of the downstream sort of tailwinds that we saw in the first half of the year start to recede and not help as much as they have been before. In such a scenario, sort of how are you thinking about sort of managing the business in that process? I mean, how could you talk us perhaps a little bit about sort of the disposal program that you talked about in the past? Whether things have changed there, priorities have changed there, whether there are other things that you are considering, perhaps a little bit about that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Good morning, Haytham, and thank you for your question. So it's relatively hard to condensate a so wide question, but I will try to do it. So we are preparing ourselves in our guidance for 2015 for not having so high levels of refinery margins and as well the Brent oil prices. Therefore, we are being quite prudent for the second half of the year, which means that we should keep our attention and our focus in execution, as I mentioned to you all in the past. Secondly, we should improve and we should fastening our cost control and cost reduction in all the downstream activities, which is the case. So we are implementing a program that we call the 60-70. So it's 60 actions and 70 million euros of safety costs. Thirdly, we are also considering the minor optimization in our activities, which means that small adjustments like the one we have done recently in relation to our domestic gas sales in business sales in Madrid. So we will pursue it. And of course, at the end of the day, the increasing of the production in Brazil is remaining the topic that we will have in our hands. That said, and taking in consideration the challenges that we will have in the future, we have to focus our attention in what is relevant in terms of technical solutions for the most challenging reservoirs that we have, which means the Área Central. So Sururu is one of the key issues. So the appraisal will continue, and the technical solutions for that field will be one of our focus. And the other one is related with Jupiter. So that is the main questions. In what relates to the economics for BMS 11, they are quite good. We are completely above what has been the forecast for the Lula field. The technical costs for the units that are under production are quite low. So we are experienced for the two first units a technical cost that is around $15 per barrel, and therefore we are completely complying with our previous plan. What is important to take in our hands is that any move that we will do in the future, being on analyzing new opportunities or on disposal of non-core business that we have, should be done under a financial discipline. And therefore, we are not concerned about that. The recent context has improved slightly our performance for 2015. As you might see in our cash flow generation, we kept almost at a neutral situation, investing approximately 600 million euros on distributing dividends and taking in consideration the financial costs in the company. And therefore, that slightly puts us in a position that is better than what we consider in our business plan. But we will have time. Execution mode is for the time being is the word, and we will keep on track for delivering based on that focus. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, please press star 1 for a question, and if you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. And we will now move to the next question from Michael Alsford with Citi. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my questions. I've got a couple of follow-ups, if I could, please. Just to come back to your new EBITDA guidance for 2015, you've given us some help on the gas and power business, where you're sort of saying that EBITDA should be 350 to 400 range in your guidance. I guess that leaves us, what, 950 to 1100 remaining from the other businesses. Based on what you've done first half, that doesn't leave you much to do. So could you maybe just give us a bit more colour as to what you're referring to in terms of your expectations on, say, the reference refining margin and perhaps oil prices, to get us a bit of a understanding as to the sensitivity on that guidance? It would just seem quite conservative based on the first half performance to date. That'd be my first question. Just secondly, just coming back to Jupiter in Brazil, I think originally back in the Capital Markets Day you talked about perhaps a pilot FPSO project in sort of 2019 to 2020. It does now sound that is somewhat now delayed, and I just wanted to get a sense as to where you thought, or if you thought, that pilot project would still happen in that kind of time frame, or whether you think that is now going to be a complete change to the way you plan to develop the asset. And then finally, just on Mozambique, on Coral FLNG, could you maybe give a bit of guidance as to what the next stages are that you need to go through to sanction the project, and if you are kind of confirming that sanctioning is likely still to be in the second half of 2015. Thank you.
Good morning, Michael, and thank you for your questions. I will take the first and the third, and I will pass the second one to Thor, that is drawing to us. So in what relates to the EBITDA guidance, just to give you as you have requested, a more color in our results for the end of the year. In what relates to the refining margins, we are forecasting that the margin, refining margin, will stay around $3 per barrel in terms of benchmark. We are also working with $57 per barrel Brent prices, and the exchange rate that we are considering is 1.15, so I'm speaking about dollar to euro. So these are the main assumptions that we are taking in consideration in our guidance for 2015. So therefore, I think the range that we have sent to you is quite in line with these premises. On top of that, of course, we are considering the production ramp up in Mangaratiba. So the fourth producer well is already starting last July, and we are also considering that the fifth producer will be operating and producing by the end, so in the last Q of this year. We are also considering the unitization effect of Lula, and we are also considering this anticipation of the fourth unit, so the Cidade Itagüí, that is fastening rather than what we have in our previous guidance. Moving now to Mozambique and Coral project. So in Coral project, we are working in order to analyze the proposals that we have received from the three consortiums that are working on that. We are now in a moment where we are analyzing and optimizing all the proposals, and keep in mind that there are three main assumptions in order to take a final investment decision. The first one is that the costs that we will be able to take in this project will be completely in line with our initial assumptions. And secondly, the marketing of the LNG is fully guaranteed, which is, as we have mentioned to you before, in a well-advanced phase. And last but not the least, guaranteeing that the project is fully funded. So they are the three premises. We are working hard in the different three items, and we hope that by the end of this year, or up to the end of this year, we will be in a position to take a decision. I will pass now to my colleague, Thor.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for your question regarding Jupiter. I'll try to elaborate a little bit more on the situation on Jupiter. First and foremost, I think we all need to remember that Jupiter, by any standard, is a world-class discovery. In Galp's view, there are about 3 billion barrels of oil and gas in place in that reservoir. So it's world-class by any standard. Secondly, this is a very technically challenging reservoir, particularly due to the high level of CO2 that has been discovered in several of the wells. And therefore, we in Gulf are supporting Petrobras in the fact that that it no makes sense to, in a way, suspend the exploration and appraisal campaign and really ask 4 or 5 year postponement on the opportunity to deliver the declaration of commerciality. Actually, it's a 5 year plus 5 year postponement that has been requested. This will also, and as you are aware, there is a process of, on the side of Petrobras to consider divestment on parts or the whole of their share in BMS 24. And it will make a lot of sense if there is a new operator coming in to spend some time on rethinking what is then the opportunity set. And what is will be the right development opportunities. So as for now, and it's correctly observed by you, we had initially in our plans expectation that it would be a pilot outside of this business plan. This is not what is now in the current plans. It makes sense to do now taking a more stepwise approach in order to find the optimal solution. This will be a good development at the end of the day.
Sure, thank you, and Carlos, thank you. Just, I'm sorry, just a quick follow-up on your point, Carlos, right at the beginning around your, just back to the numbers. You mentioned you were thinking about a reference refining margin, I think it was $3 you said for the second half, and I guess that's based off of what, 5.3 I think it was in the first half. I'm just, can you give me a bit of colour as to the moving parts? Clearly gasoline margins have been very strong in the first half. Is that simply what you're reflecting, a view that doesn't sustain itself? But, or is there more drivers behind that give you the kind of, I guess, a more cautious tone on the margin in the second half? Thank you.
Yeah, Michael, it's precisely like that. So we are, for the second half of the year, we are forecasting refining margins of around $3 per barrel. Of course, and falling down. Of course, we have taken in consideration that the first half of the year, they were quite high, related to the strong demand of gasoline in the American continent, and the extremely low oil prices. So now the gasoline and the driving season mainly in the United States will end up. And therefore, what we are anticipating is that the cracks of the gasoline against the Brent will fall down. And that's the reason why we are adjusting our forecasting of the refinery margins for the second half around $3 per barrel. So you're absolutely right. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
And we now move to Philip Rosa with Ibisi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Two questions from me. So the first one on the unitization. So it seems that you have a better idea now of what could be the impact of unitization on your output. If you could try to give us some numbers, and also whether you would have to make any upfront payment for past production that you have done so far, and whether that would affect the full year production. So to give us some color on the mechanics. And my second question relates to the technical costs that you mentioned, the $15 for the first two FPSOs. Could you just give us a split between what is the rent of the FPSO, other OPEX, and depreciation for those $15 for us to have a better idea? And I believe that those two FPSOs that you mentioned, they have a capacity that is below, for instance, the one from FPSO number 3. So do you think that those 15 still have some downside potential when you start to have this FPSO number 3 at full capacity? Thank you very much.
Hi, Philip. Good morning. Thank you for your two questions. So in relation to unitization in Lula, we are close to finalize this unitization process. And we think, and our business plan, and namely our budget and our forecast for the year end, is including the impact in production related to that process. Just to give you an idea that the mechanism that would be used to that process. Will allow all the entities to have what I could say a fairly neutral on production volumes in the medium and long term. And there are also some main assumptions that will be used based on the past costs and the profit adjustments related with everyone has invested already and what will be the initial tracked participations. So we are still ongoing with this process, and therefore I ask your care for the fact that we could not anticipate and we cannot disclose any additional information. In what relates to the technical costs, you have mentioned the downside for the bigger units. I would say the uptide, so as a matter of fact, it's a question of words. You are mentioned that have we room space to decrease the technical costs? If we look to Mangarativa unit with the flow rates per well and the productivity per well, of course, there's room space for that happen. But we will have to wait up to the plateau and the stabilization of the unit. We will see what happens with the new units that are coming to the spot, and we will see. So with time, we will evaluate that with more attention and more deeply. For the time being, I refrain ourselves. We will refrain ourselves to enter in more details. Thank you, Philip.
Thank you.
And we will move to Lydia Rainforth with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good afternoon, gentlemen. Two questions, if I could. The first one, just a very technical one. On the refining side, the premium to the benchmark was actually much higher than last quarter. I'm just wondering if you can give us an indication of how flexible the product slate actually is. Is it a case of, so if gasoline margins are higher, you can get an extra 2 to 3 percentage points of yield of gasoline out, or just of what that scale is? And then secondly, if I could come back to Mozambique and the Coral project, you did talk about there being the three main assumptions, the cost being in line, the marketing of LNG is fully guaranteed, and that the project is fully funded. Which of those is actually more challenging at the moment? It's obviously, so given where some of the LNG pricing is that one of the biggest issues? Thank you.
Good morning, Lydia, and thank you for your two questions. So in what relates to refining margins, and we are seeing that refining has becoming from the poor guy in our company to the star of the company for the queue. And therefore, let's try to deepening a little bit to better understanding what is behind the results that we have achieved that were not related with the market. So for refining, it is absolutely important two or three issues and two or three actions that we have been able to guarantee during the last Q or the last half or the first half of the year. The first one was availability. Let's say that having the refining system available, it was the first point to guarantee that we'll be able to benefit of the context. The second one has to do with the stability and the productivity of and the capacity to use the conversion capacity that we have within our refining system. But on top of that, we have been able to optimize our sourcing not only in relation to the crude oil raw material, but also by using more VGO that has experienced a higher discount versus or vis-a-vis to Brent in the last Q. And part of this relevant and high premium in our refining system came precisely from that fact. So when we consider our refining margins, we have to take in consideration that we are not only buying and processing crude oil. We also buy from the outside of our refining system relevant volumes of VGO. And the VGO has been with higher discounts and comparing with the Brent. And that has have a positive impact in our P&L. In what relates to Mozambique and to the marketing of the LNG in Mozambique, without disclosing too much, what I can say to you is that we are having within the consortium, so within the Area 4 consortium, we are having several negotiations and several contacts with different counterparts. And what we are doing is more focus on the Coral project. So the first gas that we are considering and the first negotiation process that we have put in place is related with Coral. Of course, Coral, as I mentioned to you before, has for the time being three issues to be addressed. One is the LNG marketing. The second one is the technical solution for engineering and construction. And the third one is financing the project. So the three are linked. And of course, the marketing of the LNG is completely subject to the solution that we will have, and moreover, to the time period that we will be capable to be on the market. So I think by the end of this year, we will be in the better conditions to better disclose to you and to present a global solution that we will address the Coral project. Thank you, Olivia.
Perfect. Thank you.
And the next question will come from Hamish Clegg with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gents. Just two questions, obviously. First of all, just on it's really to focus on your guidance. Your working interest guidance for the full year this year seems to imply that there isn't much further ramp up from existing production within the portfolio, if my numbers are right. Could you maybe explain if that's just you being prudent or if we can expect any particular fields to have outages in the second half of this year, whether it be planned maintenance or whatever? The second question is on, fairly similar, in fact, is on CapEx. Regarding your CapEx guidance, if you were to run rate the existing CapEx we've already seen in the first half of the year, and this may sound obvious, you know, we're below your bottom end of your CapEx range. Can we assume that there'll be a small increase in costs into the year end, or can we also assume that you've built in some degree of contingency in that CapEx guidance? An example, actually, if you could maybe comment on this as a sort of point within the CapEx question, I noticed your OpEx has come down on a unit per barrel basis very dramatically, and if you could give some more color on that, it would be very useful.
Good morning, Anish. I will take the first question and I will pass to Philippe for the second one. In our production guidance for 2015, that we are forecasting the 43,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, we are considering several contributions for the second half of the year. So if for one side we will have the FPSO number 4 that will be starting operations sooner than we have planned, we have also to consider in the other part the unitization effect that is not effective yet. So it's a process that is still ongoing and will impact potentially by the fourth queue. But we have also to consider that we will have a turnaround in Angola, so in BBLT and B14K Lianzi, that we will have to do a tie-in during between 1 and 2 months. So therefore, and all considered together, we have balanced, and I think the forecast that we are putting on place, I think it is prudent and achievable. So I will pass now to Philippe.
Thanks.
Hamish, we are hinting at bottom of the range within the CapEx guidance we have given you. I'm not sure we are being prudent or not, but we have quite a number of projects. We're working on Block 32 in Angola, BMS 11, of course, in Brazil. We also have Mozambique, so bottom of the range, but not much below that. So I would not run rates H1 at this stage. Thank you.
Thanks.
And we now move to Henri Patricot with UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, Ryan. Thank you for the presentation. Just have a couple of questions. Actually, I wanted to follow up on the previous question on cost. Given the steep drop in the unit production cost in E&P this quarter to 7.6, I was wondering if that was kind of a new range where you can remain over the next few quarters. And second one, just quickly on the arrival, you've just given the development plan to the E&P, when you expect to get the approval on that? Thank you.
Harry, good morning. Can I ask you to reformulate your first question because we didn't follow you?
Yes, it's just on the unit production cost in E&P, which fell to $7.6 per barrel this quarter. I was wondering if that was kind of a new range for the next few quarters where you can remain. Given it was at $12 per barrel in Q1, so that's quite a major change.
Henry, we were wondering what is the meaning of your question, but I think we are following you. So we have having in Angola a better dilution of our costs in the past that we are not forecasting for the future, and therefore that should not be considered for the future. I think that will answer properly to your question. In what relates to the development plan related to Yara, we are still waiting that could have an answer in the second half of this year. So I would say that possibly in the third Q, but I will prefer to tell you that up to the end here of 2015, we will have an answer to the POD that has been submitted to ANP. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And we're now moving to Thomas Adolf with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Last but not least, a few questions on Brazil, please, and then just a quick one for Philippe. Just sticking with Yara, you say you submitted the development plan. I wonder whether, in conjunction with the plan, whether you've also submitted something around the unitization or whether that's something that you'll look to do later on. Sticking to Brazil, on the replicants, you've got six topside integration jobs related to your FPSOs, two of which will go to Brasfeld. I think two you've just transferred from OSX to China. And I remember discussing with you that there are another two that you're doing some work on, and I wondered whether there's any update around those two. And finally, for Philippe, on working capital, you talk about stock optimization benefit during the second quarter. I wondered whether there's a bit more upside to that in the future, i.e., you know, or whether it's been maxed out. Thank you.
Good morning, Thomas. Thank you. Let's share between us the questions that we have addressed. So I will take the replicants one, I will pass the other to Thor and finally to Philippe, the last one that you have addressed directly to him. So in what concerns to the replicants and taking all the measures that we have already announced to you, we are seeing that they are under control. So we expect to have two units available for first oil in 2017, three additional in 2018, and a last one in 2019. So therefore, they are on the schedule that we have released to you in the CMD last March. Of course, we are considering that the mitigation measures that we have implemented will be succeeded, which we are confident it will be the case. So now I will pass to Thor for the POD of Yara and the unitization.
Thomas, good morning. With respect to Yara and unitization, that is a process that has not started yet. What the parties are in agreement with is that first we will finalize the unitization process for Lula and the Lula field, and thereafterwards we will move ahead and look for the Yara unitization. So this will come as the next step, and it is too early to anticipate anything in this respect. Thank you.
And the final question today will come from Anish Kapadia with TPH. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Just a couple of questions, one on CapEx and then one on Lula. On the CapEx side of things, it sounds like you're underspending this year. I think that's partly because of some of the delays to the FPSOs. So I'm just wondering, in terms of that delayed CapEx impact, could you give your expectations on how much you'd expect CapEx to increase in 2016 as a result of those delays? The second question was on the reservoir performance on Lula. I think we've seen some water breakthrough now on Lula, probably not too much of a surprise, but given the amount of time it's been producing for. But can you just discuss in your eyes how the reservoir has been performing relative to expectations, and also how you see the heterogeneity of the reservoir given the issues you've seen with Lula West and that development being pushed back? Thank you.
Hi, good morning, Anish. I will take the first one. I will pass the oil water contact to Thor, and I will ask that there's room space to Philip to answer to the last question that Thomas had addressed to him. So in what relates to the CapEx guidance, and namely what will be the impact for 2016, I confirm that in our business plan that we have shared with you last March, we have already considered the time delays in the FPSOs that in average we have considered 1 year delay, and therefore the CapEx, the guidance that we have disclosed to you, was completely aligned with that. So we are not anticipating additional CapEx for the next year due to that fact, since we are complying the timetable that we have considered as main assumption in the business plan. So you should keep that as not additional CapEx in the future. So I will pass now to Thor, and I will request time to Philippe to address the Thomas question.
With respect to Lula, let me first and foremost say, and let this be sort of the key takeaway, having spent now close to 27 years in this industry, I have not come across an oil field where the average production performance has been so good as it is in Lula and Lula Eresima. With respect to the water breakthrough, it is more, and it's a surprise, I would say, that it took actually close to 5 years before we got the first water breakthrough. As you will know, Angus Reis came into production in October 2010, and it took close to 5 years before we saw the first water breakthrough. We are, however, today
not even sure whether this is a real water breakthrough. We have quite strong evidence that this is actually is water coming from in an injection well that is close by the P8H well, which is sort of the chief producer of water right now. And it seems to be that the aquifers still have not in any meaningful way been breaking through. The water production in PH8 is very manageable right now. It's around 1,200 barrels per day. And the two other wells that where we see water trace now, the level is around 35 barrels per day. So this is very manageable in all circumstances. And as you know, there is a quite significant water treatment facility on the FPSO. So for the time being, this is according to expectation. And overall, Lula de Cima is going way beyond our initial expectations. Thank you. Then my colleagues are reminding me, Lula West, just a few comments regarding Lula West. This is a huge reservoir by any standards. So there will be, and it is a reservoir, as you correctly pointed out, that is partly not 100% consistent reservoir-wise through the whole field. So we will get surprises and find areas where there's less of producibility and also actually less of injectivity than originally anticipated. On the other hand, we will also see, as we have just recently seen in Iratima, where we see production capabilities that is way outstripping our expectations with around now 33,000 barrels per day on average production capacity. So bottom line remains, it is beyond expectations currently in the production ability for Lula de Cima. Thank you.
Thomas, you asked about inventories. I promise I was not trying to avoid the answering, but it is a very difficult question. Internally, I keep saying, yes, there's ample margin to reduce working capital. And if you look back the last 2 years, what CALP has done has been nothing short of a huge job at reducing capital employed in clients and in inventories. Having said this, and to be frank, all the low-hanging fruit has been caught, and we should not expect, depends, of course, on Brent prices, but assuming current Brent prices, we should not expect a lot of fat remaining in our balance sheet. Thank you.
Thank you, Philippe and Tor. Ladies and gentlemen, so thank you for your questions. I sincerely hope the session has been useful for you all, and the answers that we have given to your questions will clarify the issues that you might have. I also hope that it has been clear that our main focus continues to be the execution, delivering continuous and sustainable production growth in the coming years. To do so, we are mitigating the execution risk in Lula and Iratim reservoirs, and we are continuing with the development of other projects also in Brazil. We are reaching new highs in terms of production, and we will continue to deliver growth consistently over the next quarters. With the existing three production units that are up and running, we are also preparing to start the production of the first one. And the number five and the number six, so Cidade Marica and Cidade Aquarema, are also on track to start production in less 1 year. We are also advancing our projects elsewhere, as you saw, and namely in Mozambique and also in Block 32 in Angola. So we will deliver on our E&P strategy, support by a profitable and efficient downstream and gas businesses. Thank you all, and I hope you have a good day and a great summer break for all of you. See you, and thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.